you could go and work your ass off for the next 15 years and it still not work. And then at the conclusion of that, you've got no kind of skill sets that you can necessarily apply to anything else. It's like, I'm not trying to discourage it, but this is the reality of working your ass off. That's what it means. And it means sleeping on floors, and it means begging, borrowing, stealing. You know, it's kind of like, it's really hard.
Hey everyone, this is Professor Grant Schofield, the author of What the Fat, and you're listening to My Kiwi Life with Will Fleming. To hear me and Will ponder a bit of life, download episode 1 on mykiwilife.com.
Hey friends, and welcome to this week's episode of My Kiwi Life. If you're new to the podcast, I just want to say hello. My name's Will Fleming, and I'm here to have a yarn with you guys. It's really cool that you're able to join me on this podcast wherever you may be around the world. What do we do here? Well, here's the key. We acknowledge that we don't know what the heck's going on. And I'm the first to say that. I've got no clue what's going on. So my game plan was to talk to people who have built a career working that out. And so far, it's cool. We're pondering a bit of life. We're stretching that bubble in the mind. And we're trying to do it in kind of honest ways that aren't too woo-woo, if you know what I mean. So no Tony Robbins here. It's just a bit of conversation, a bit of sit down, and a bit of banter. Things that we're built to do. Okay, if you're not new here, you know what the drill is. I'm going to talk with a cool guest this week, and he is a cool guest. His name is David Benge, and he runs New Zealand's version of Vice. Well, he runs Vice New Zealand, I should say it properly. He's a real cool dude. He spent a few years in Australia. He managed some bands, Fur Patrol, I think was one of them. And then he went off and had a look around the US, and he's come back here to run Vice. And so you all know Vice. It's kind of like, you know, the media organization that's the anti-CNN, the anti-MSNBC, all that kind of stuff. All things that I feel like are infiltrating into New Zealand, you know. If you think about our news, whose narrative are we supporting here? So anyway, we get a little bit deep and down with all that stuff. A couple of thanks. I'd just like to thank Podcasts New Zealand for, you know, all the stuff they do for My Kiwi Life. That includes the studio, you know, the conversations I have back and forth with Paul. It's really good stuff. So visit PodcastsNZ or podcasts.co.nz. A few other thanks. Crawford, he comes in to run the little sound desk. My pal Muzz, who's helping me record this intro. Honestly, it's all for free. It's all for love. So having really good time doing this. What else do I have to say here? Nothing much, team. That's us. We're ready for this week's podcast. I hope you guys are doing well. And that'll be about it from me. So enjoy this week's episode. High fives to you all.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi Life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my Kiwi Life.
So your last name, Benge, is that right?
Yeah, Benge.
Where is that from?
I don't know. I know I should.
it's like one of those things that people don't do anymore, eh? Because there's no time to like worry about the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mongrel thing, but I mean, I know back to... I guess back as far as my granddad's father was a New Zealand soldier.
Really?
So my great-grandfather, Orson, I think, met a young lady in the Russian, during the Russian Revolution in the royal court and
wow.
Took her out of there and took her back to New Zealand. They started the White Russian Society. And
wow.
Yeah.
Those are like real stories too, eh? Like if you think of like our own lives and we're like battling away trying to find a narrative. And then like I remember hearing my grandfather, his grandfather, like he was some SAS dude who like carried, and I'll probably butcher the story, I should know, but it was like some Chinese princess on his back for like 4 days.
Right.
Like it's like a straight up Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
And that stuff freaks me out because I'm like, well,
maybe there's a hero in me. But I haven't been in a fight, you know. I haven't done, like, the idea of going to war freaks me out, you know what I mean? And it's like, even my grandfather, he got this war medal. It's like from the Queen and stuff. And his job was to go and blow up a German train. And I'm like, I said to my dad, what did he say when he came back from the war? And he said, oh, it was just like a cool adventure.
Wow.
And I want to know what the difference is.
I would go so far as to, I would ponder as to whether the difference isn't that we have such extraordinary adventures at our fingertips these days, and versus life back then, which would have, it would have blown your mind if you did that. Like, it's like I live on a farm. I've never left my immediate surrounds, let alone the country. And now it's like, oh, there's all of us together with this gang. We're doing this crazy thing. Like, it's quite a different, like, we're in a luxury or lack thereof of just having so much, such a wealth of information at our fingertips, and the ability to get on a plane, even if you're in severe debt. Most of our generation is like, well, I can still go to New York for 3 weeks, don't you know? And do, you know? So,
well, it makes you wonder what it does to us psychologically as well. Like, because I think we're still an experiment happening. I mean, the internet's only been around, what, 20 years or something? So, we still don't really know. I mean,
I think we're in an experiment about to cease happening, but yeah, I agree.
And being exposed to so much, like you're saying, if you were from a farm and your biggest thing during the day was, you know, I don't know, going for a hunt or something, I think you would get all of the things that we all strive towards, fresh air, you know, fitness. But now we're like repackaging all these craziness into, you know, what we think is good for us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where things like Vice come in, and you work for Vice, so that was why I originally reached out to just, first of all, what the hell is that like? That's amazing, because I feel like Vice is one of those areas where, in this experiment, that's a go-to now, you know? We've lifted the curtain to say the narrative that was once told doesn't work anymore, you know? I wonder if those old guys in the war, there was an idea of like, hey, come join the army, you'll have an adventure. You know, you weren't really thinking about the craziness, but now it's almost like regular life. Everyone kind of knows it's a bit bullshit, but we still don't know. So Vice, I think, I mean, is that how you kind of came across it?
I came across Vice, I started a record label in Australia in about 2003 off the top of my head. And Vice started in Australia that same year. And the two people that were running it became close friends of mine. And I looked to advertise in the magazine because it, the kind of counterculture, subculture that it was discussing was relevant to the different artists that we were, the types of people that were interested in Vice were interested in what the types of records we were putting out. And it just kind of grew and developed. The first band I signed to the record label was managed by a woman called Nadine Gelino, who worked for Vice out of the New York office, and she was from Canada as well. So I went over to New York on some trip. We went back and forth a bit back at that time. And met her and met the Vice guys there. And I was still in Australia, and I was still doing the record label thing, but I'd become quite close friends with the guys at the Vice office in Melbourne, and that was growing and expanding. I think within 2 or 3 years, they kind of had, you know, 7 or 8 people from the 2 people they'd initially had. And they were getting into filming everything that they were doing, and they asked me to be a host for their television, these small short form documentaries they were making, and I interviewed Andrew WK, and we learned how to throw a boomerang together, as instructed by this indigenous Australian, and I actually flew over here. And we interviewed Enya Taylor about misappropriation of culture and whether it was acceptable for Pākehā to be tattooed with Moko Tattoo, as it seemed to be becoming quite a kind of fashionable thing. I think at the time Robbie Williams had one and Billy Connolly, and there were people, and so I was curious as to what his thinking on that was, given he was tattooing with traditional hand tools, and his answer in the way that only Inya can answer a question was that I should sit down and he'd tattoo me whilst we did the interview. So we did, and I hoped like hell that the answer wasn't going to be that it was culturally inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing, culture, isn't it? You look at, you know, Sonny Bill Williams and that tattoo, and I can remember myself thinking, hey, that tattoo would look pretty cool on me.
Right.
But it wasn't really about any meaning. It was just, it turned from something very meaningful to like something that you could just wear as a, I guess, a visual piece of art. And I'm a bit torn with tattoos because I've always wanted one, but I've never known what to get. So I feel like when I know what I want, then that'll be my trigger to be able to go get one.
I guess what I was curious about was being a New Zealander living abroad and having this feeling as a Pākehā New Zealander that I defined being a New Zealander as being as both cultures. I didn't think of myself as a white New Zealander. I didn't necessarily think myself as Māori, because I'm not. But there was an influence of Indigenous culture in New Zealand upon everyday life that, even though it may not have been to the extent that it could or should have, was so vastly different to the majority of other places in the world I went in terms of Indigenous culture. And I'd gotten a bunch of prison tattoos and stupid stuff already, and I was thinking about, like, would this be appropriate to get something that for me represented New Zealand as a whole, but that was kind of part of the reason we did this whole interview, is just because we were curious as to what the answer was, I guess.
I have to ask too, when we're talking about, you know, designs, where are you at with our flag, with the flag thing?
I got back to the country about 2 years ago. I'd been living away for 15 years. And last year, end of last year, I was in a small bar in New York, and I heard these two Americans. I was with my brother, and I heard these two Americans, just old guys sitting in a bar getting drunk, and they're like, "You believe these New Zealanders? They're wanting to change their flag, you know?" And they thought it was really peculiar. I mean, look, again, from my end, unless it was a Maori flag, I'm like, it is what it is. Putting money and energy and effort into placing a multicolored fern, and with all due respect to all the red peakers out there, or whatever it was called, I don't really care about that one either. I'm like this. I guess your flag is like, what's the point? There's so much else going on that needs fixing in this country.
Oh yeah.
That to invest time and energy and effort into it. Like I say, if everybody went, or if nobody went, but Māori went, hey, you know what? You've had it for 170 years or whatever, and now we're going to do this for the next 170 years. I'd go, hells yeah, I back that. Let's do that. And then at the conclusion of that, maybe we can figure out a way to amalgamate the two and have a New Zealand flag. But I couldn't care less.
Well, it feels like something that, you know, from, well, I guess a couple of things. One, why I'm interested in this is because I'd classify myself as just the everyday person who's like just trying to get through the day, you know? So I haven't spent a career critically analyzing things. This is just a recent thing. And my new thing to think about is perspective and what does it all mean, you know? So I figure conversation's a good place to do that, as opposed to like internet creeping and blogging and stuff like that. I want to make an effort to do what we do, which is talk. So I don't really spend too much time pondering this, but when you do scratch the surface and you start asking yourself, who's the agenda for? And it feels like something, when I've seen Vice, that that's like a Vice story. So is what does the New Zealand side of Vice do? Because I don't want to say to you, when's the flag story coming out? Do you know what I mean? What's how does it all piece together?
Look, I mean, it's a substantially large operation these days. It started in Montreal, it moved to New York, and then in 96, it was in New York by 98 or something, I think. And then they opened a UK office, and then the Australian office, which theoretically was Australia and New Zealand, was the third cab off the rank. And that was, like I said, 2002, 2003. It's in 39 countries now. So there's a, and the New York office now, instead of the 12 people that were there when I first started visiting, I think there's 600 odd. So what is Vice? It's a large question, but what is Vice New Zealand? Vice New Zealand has been, up until very recently, it's essentially been, there's been a salesperson in New Zealand looking after the New Zealand outpost for the Australasian company, where the head office has been Melbourne, and there's a Sydney office as well. And what I guess what I wanted to do with it when I started chatting to the guys in Australia about what they were doing here was do what it was doing in other territories, which was start telling New Zealand stories through the Vice lens. And Vice is so many things. It's a tricky thing because I think you'll often have people who are like, oh, you guys are really ironic, or you're really irreverent, or it's really funny, you know. And the thing is, it's all of those things, but really what it endeavors to be is tell stories that you haven't heard before, or if you have, tell them through a lens in a fashion that you haven't already had regurgitated 25 times over. We've got a reporter on the road at the moment with the Donald Trump campaign, and you know, he talks about missing his flight but he's black, and about how they've, you know, banned this person from their party, and just a different form of writing. I think the idea, especially with the video content, is that you feel like you're part of it, not in a reality TV show Big Brother way, but you feel like you're the camera and you're just the fourth person or the fifth person or however many people are there. Mm. It's very rare for there to be direct interview questions that are answered and cut up and down. It's kind of like this. They're all kind of introductory pieces, and you're just meeting people and characters that aren't superstars. They're not, you know, sure, we've interviewed President Obama, but it's also everyday people that that you can identify with. And I think that's why it cuts through. That's why it's relevant, why it's important. Well,
the honesty, right?
It's honest, but you can identify with the characters because they are just the same as you and I. You know, it's like these aren't, some of them have come up with some extraordinary inventions and done some interesting things, absolutely, but it's not done in this kind of coming down from the mountain kind of vibe. It's just interesting characters that are people like you and I that happen to have done something, yeah, that we want to talk about, you know. And the desire to just make, so I mean, we hired our first New Zealand editor here a month ago, and we've got our first New Zealand staff writer, and so it's expanding, which is really exciting. And we're expanding through telling New Zealand content in this fashion in the way that it's been talked about around the world and in these other territories, which has proven to work, you know.
Yeah, I was reading some articles on the website about because Australia just legalized medical marijuana, and there's like Vice people questioning whether we could get it done in New Zealand, and it's cool because you know you're not going to see that on other sites. Sort of a millennial perspective on that stuff.
Absolutely, I think And again, you know, there's a very good chance other media outlets will talk about legalization of marijuana, but the way it's done, you know, it's just that classic, like, you look at any news outlet anywhere in the world and the intonation and the way it's spoken about, and then they do that weird thing where they turn their head and the camera cuts, and it's like, why is that a thing? Why does that have to be the way we consume television news, you know? And you know, segueing into television, the newest thing that we've just started is Viceland. And Spike Jonze is our creative director for that. So everything goes through his kind of his supervision. But again, we just get to do interesting stuff. We've got Ellen Page, who was the actress off of Juno. And she is doing a TV series called Gaycation, where she goes around the world and explores LGBT culture in different parts of the world, and it's probably geared a little bit more towards America, the viewing, but I think it resonates with people around the world. But in particular in America, it's like, well, you know, so few Americans have passports and so few of them have ever left the territory, that you imagine like some kind of younger gay dude in middle America a bit freaked out about coming out, and it's like, oh, there's these interesting things happening in Brazil, there's this happening in Israel, there's this happening in Japan, there's this happening in, you know, it's quite a, I think it's necessary, you know.
Well, and also, like, if I think closer to home, I think even conversations like what we're having, for that person in the middle of Christchurch or a little small town, who, the way I think New Zealanders have traditionally done it is, look, we'll just not really be emotional, we'll just look pretty tough, we'll just back the All Blacks 100%, and that's really our gig, you know?
And it's all we've got.
It's really how I was raised, you know.
Yeah, me
and
too.
It's not until I had a few different experiences with different people and travelled, that's probably a big thing. I was lucky to go to the UK and have a look around, and I mean, it's a bit like New Zealand. But what was the States like for you? I mean, we talked at the start of the podcast about, you know, these guys in the old days going on war adventures. Mm. You had your own adventure in 15 years, did you say?
Well, it was 10 in Melbourne, Australia. I started out, I left home and went to Victoria University, and I was playing in bands, and then I started managing bands, managed a band called Fur Patrol, and they had a record that did kind of pretty well, and we didn't want to limit ourselves to a country with a population of, at the time, from memory, 3.5 million. It was like, you know, this is great that it's doing well here, but this is a really small place, and there's all these other places, and let's see if it can do well in some other places as well. And so we moved to Australia and worked quite hard there, and things, and the band got re-signed, and we did a little bit of stuff in Europe, but it probably didn't click the way they maybe wanted it to, and I ended up starting a record label with a couple of other people, and I was managing other bands and started touring bands.
Is that hard? Like, when I mean hard, like, my current job is you know, directing a crew of 20, but everyone's highly motivated, they want to be there. What's directing, or not directing, managing a band? I mean, probably on stage is home, right? But everything else?
Fur Patrol aside, if they're listening to this, no. It can be, it's a bit like herding cats at points. I mean, I think the thing is, what's difficult with any creative industry is you have people that are creative, and a lot of creative people don't want to do, or don't see the value in kind of regular 9-to-5 work. They're just not good at it, a lot of them. Like, it doesn't, you know, mean they can't. There's always exceptions to every rule. But you know, you throw yourself into these things, and it's music outside of making films is an extraordinarily expensive hobby. And things have changed, obviously, in the 15, 20, years that I've been doing this. But things have changed. But there was a time where, you know, if you were going to make a record, then you obviously have to have this kind of these instruments, this musical equipment. You have to hire a studio of this magnitude. You have to pay for an engineer to do this, the producer to do that. Then once you've, like, even if you did self-fund all of that, then it was like, how am I going to get this out? The internet's changed a lot of that. But with it, a lot of the revenue streams have shifted, you know, enormously. So it's, I think one of the biggest challenges about managing a band from this territory is the education of what you're getting yourself into. It's like you kind of need to sit down with the band before you do anything. And at the time, I mean, I was 20, 21, so I didn't know either. But nowadays, when I talk to people, if they're like, "Yeah, we want to make it," you're like, "Cool, write down what that means to you, because it could be different for different people and different things." And then think about the fact that you're going to have to sacrifice potentially in order to do this, relationships with your family, romantic relationships, your friends. Like, you could go and work your ass off for the next 15 years and it still not work, and then at the conclusion of that you've got no kind of skill sets that you can necessarily apply to anything else. It's like, I'm not trying to discourage it, but like, this is the reality of working your ass off. That's what it means. And it means sleeping on floors, and it means begging, borrowing, stealing. You know, it's kind of like, it's really hard, but
yeah,
I think it's obviously also very rewarding when you get to witness people interacting with your art.
Well, and it fascinates me, this idea of, you know, you'll see people online and maybe it's even on X Factor. That's probably a terrible example, but and they say you can't sing, and there's those people who are like, yeah, I can. And so I admire that some people just reckon they're the poo, you know, and you need to take a big whiff. I wish sometimes I had a bit of that, but I'm very self-aware myself. So there's kind of like two sides, you know.
It's just delusion though, isn't it?
Well, I mean, a bit of delusion's all right, isn't it?
Like, well, but this is all subjective. Like, you know, I mean, we're getting deep into it now.
Good.
But like, what, you know, what is art? It is subjective, and I have an opinion on what I think art is and what I think is good art or bad art, but it's not necessarily any more relevant than the person down the road's opinion, which might be completely different. And if some dude that can't sing at all thinks they can sing, it's quite possibly because they're tone deaf and they literally can't hear any differently. There's a million things, you know? And I think that confidence I think the distinction between someone who's an artist and who isn't is someone who manifests work, someone who creates, someone who actually does something. There's a billion people can sit around like making little bits and pieces and starting half projects and talking about how they're an artist. But people that regularly do it and see a project through to its conclusion and then put it to bed and then start something else across multiple art form kind of mediums or just operating within one medium, all of that's, I think, extraordinary and really hard to do. Mm. And I don't think people give that enough credibility. And within that, there are some driven people that work extraordinarily hard whose art, in my humble opinion, is horrible. But that doesn't mean they're less of an artist or that they work harder. I think it's really difficult to kind of get your head around what is good and what isn't, because it all just comes down to someone's opinion at the end of the day. And it's not quantifiable through sales. It's not quantifiable through numbers, attendance numbers at concerts. Because there are artists that, in my opinion, are so much better than ones that can be on the radio or sell, you know, crazy amounts of albums, that they've never even made a record, you know? But that doesn't mean they're not as good. It's just that they've just been, they've just written demos at their, in their home, or they don't desire to do that, or they've, they just play out live, and, you know, it's, the scale is gigantic.
Yeah.
Well, like this one time I went to the art gallery and they had the like light, the light festival, the, I can't remember what it was called, something like that. And I went into this room and there was just like, this guy just had one light, one big tall light at the side and like two lights in the middle and then three lights on the other side of the wall. And I was like, what the f*** is this? And I went over and just looked up and it said, 1, 2, 3. I was going for something simple, something like that. And it's like, that to me is like not art. Do you know what I mean? It's just not. It's so lazy. And the fact that he's like tricking people into thinking that it's art. Like I like looked around to make sure I wasn't on like some reality show or something, you know, like those like hipsters would go in and be like, oh, this is art, man. 1, 2, 3.
That's the imprison your clothes scenario. But I think the thing is, within that situation, there are people that like deconstruct and they've created and are capable of creating infinitely more elaborate works, and that's what inspires them or excites them at that moment, is to bring it right back and do something minimalist, which I think can be really interesting. I think where it where I think that falls over is exactly what you just said, which is when the critics of it don't back themselves. It's like, oh my God, this is genius. It's like, cool, why is it genius? Like, explain why you think it's genius. What has it done? What has it done to affect you? What, like, on what criteria are you judging this? And for you, like, your explanation is perfect. It's like, this is shit, it's not art. And it, but that's no less valid than someone else who's like, well, no, I think it's absolute genius. But you start putting that stuff in context and it's like, well, the reason this is genius is because of this series of things that happened, and this is historically how he's worked, and these are the things he's done or she's done. And so this is extraordinarily interesting that they've decided to produce this story in this fashion, you know? You're like, oh, right, context, sure, makes more sense. But that, again, is Emperor's New Clothes. It's kind of like, well, you know, blind taste test. It's like, here's a $700 bottle of wine and here's a $12 bottle of wine, you know? Mm-hmm. Who, how many, you know, some people will definitely be able to tell the difference. But, or maybe more importantly, here's a $800 bottle of wine and here's a $550 bottle of wine. So, oh, this is clearly the better wine. It's like, man, you could have saved yourself $250.
Well, I think you, you know, brought up something in terms of, you looked around to make sure you weren't being punked. And so there's this deeper human emotion of what you're saying is that, well, maybe is everyone trying to pretend they like it and I'm the only one who doesn't?
Totally. But, and that's why I guess, I say it's strength of convictions. Think about what it is you don't like about it and don't be ashamed to say it. Also, don't be ashamed to change your opinion if people bring to light new evidence and new things that make you reassess your initial opinion, you know? It's, don't stick to your guns for the sake of sticking to them.
Yeah.
But
it's hard though, eh? Like, and if you take the New Zealand culture again, it's almost like we're on that team. Go Richie, you know? Richie says the flag's good. I'm on, man, because he's Richie. And I'm torn on that because I'm like, well, I like Richie, but I don't really know if I like the new flag. And I'm just explain it a bit more to me, you know? It's come just after TPP. I don't get it. I'm too dumb to interact on that level. So I feel like you're tricking me, but you might not be. I might have just watched too much 80s TV shows.
Conspiracy theories. Yeah, look, it's, yeah, who the hell knows?
The flag looks like, the new flag, it looks like fan art to me, where they've just gone, take this flag and then the sports flag and we'll just kind of put it together. And it just looks like someone's, you know, when someone writes like fan fiction for a movie or something, that's what that flag looks like to me. It looks just cheap and like, if you give it to a kid to design a new flag, that's what they would do. They'll take the old flag and the sport flag and just shove it together.
Imagine how like hurt the person who designed it must feel with every, well, not everyone, but a lot of people kind of bagging on it. You know what I mean?
Dude, but no one designed shit.
True.
They just, it's like you're saying, yeah, they put a fern on a flag that already existed, and we already had a fern as our national emblem. It's like, this is not, there's no design involved. There's no thought. It's like when Fletcher Challenge or whatever spent $1 million on their rebrand, and it was, and the rebrand was an exclamation mark. It's like, that's genius. It's like, well, sure. It's an exclamation mark.
I really did like the red pig flag, because it was one, it was that thing that it looked like a flag.
Well, they
I
also couldn't tell, tried to, yeah, give a backstory to it, which made you think, there's
someone put some thought into
I
it.
I can, yeah, see it, yeah, melting.
Yeah. I definitely agree that there, yeah, felt like that there was more thought put into that one than
but it was
others.
That thing where I looked at it and I can't really explain why, but it just looked like a flag. It looked like I could see it up next to sort of Ireland and France and those sort of simple, you know, I'm being contradictory here, but simple flags that looked just like, you know, they just colors, but it's identifying to the to what you think that country is now.
Maybe we're just all not sure what our country is. I mean, what that was reflected a little bit, right, in the votes that 1 million people didn't vote.
Well, I think it's I think a lot of people didn't vote because they thought the whole thing was so preposterous. It's like, I'm not going to include myself in this process, you know.
Are we the ones, though, that need to be... Here's my thoughts, and it comes through a bit of a, you know, peanut brain. But it seems like fellas who went to war, they all stood for something, right? Then you come forward a little bit, the nukes were in town, were on the way, and they said no. So... are we those people that need to stand up and say, this ain't good enough?
Well, I was in New York during Occupy Wall Street, and I volunteered down there and helped out with some of the staging some of the concerts. And I felt like at that time that was the moment. I thought that perhaps that was the moment that we were going to stand up and go, like, this isn't good enough. I don't know how bad it needs to get until that happens. I mean, you look at what's currently happening. I had a couple of conversations recently with people where we've talked about kind of the whole Donald Trump scenario. And it struck me the other day that I couldn't articulate really what I thought the differences were between John Key and Donald Trump, outside of haircuts. But the Donald might be a little more brash, slightly. I mean, it's not like John Key comes across as a smart, articulate guy. He's, I think his intention is to come across as just a New Zealand bloke. But I don't think he really does. I don't think his policies are hugely different to a lot of what Trump is banging on about. I mean, they're both quote unquote successful businessmen. I just think it's an interesting thing to look at when you can see something. And I think that's what's interesting about what's happening in the American political race at the moment, is that it really is bringing to the forefront. This isn't disguised and enshrouded in political language and political clothing and kind of rhetoric that a large percentage of people just kind of goes over the head. It's like, no, we don't like Mexicans. Let's keep them out. It's like, all right, that's not too difficult to understand what you're saying, you know? And when you have a whole bunch of kind of people that feel offended, there's a fantastic article in the New York Times about the rise of the Ku Klux Klan. And the reason that happened was because these people had been able to, they'd owned these other human beings and they'd been able to rape them when they wanted, and it was just, you know, property. And so with the emancipation of slavery, it kind of gave birth to this hate-filled group of people that really kind of came to and was like, it was a real knee-jerk reaction to the very humble beginnings of equality. But they're saying that this is what's happening right now with Donald and his supporters, is that we've just had two terms of a black president and people can't deal with it. They're enraged and they've got this fat white kind of monstrosity out there, and it's about, you know, the only way it could be more opposite would be if Bernie Sanders was a black lesbian woman, and then it would be like, all right, now we've got a race on our hands. but the fact that, you know, Donald is a hugely separate person and different to everything that Obama has said and stood for, that I think people that just don't like Obama or just don't like Democrats, full stop, are embracing this and hurling themselves into it. And I've met a bunch of like people that have traditionally been like Democratic voters who are saying, well, Bernie's too extreme and I won't vote Hillary. So, I, you know, why not give Donald a go? And there is that sense that, well, he's just a figurehead anyway. What is he actually going to be able to do? But I just still think he's taken it out of the, like, yeah, that's a rambly thing to say, but I think he's taken it outside of the world of politics and put it into the world of popular culture. And he's a rock star. It's, you know, Reagan and these other people that have not, it wouldn't surprise me if Arnold Schwarzenegger became, you know, president at some point, but it's like, yeah, he's known as a reality TV show and as a hard-line businessman, and people are like, well, that's what's wrong with the country. Too much politics, not enough business, you know?
Well, what I think, when you were talking about Occupy Wall Street before, I think what we're kind of seeing, and it's definitely what you were saying as well, but what we're seeing is the kind of the extent of that, what people were going to, where they just don't trust politicians that are sort of backed by Wall Street, which is what Obama is.
And Hillary
definitely is.
Yeah.
So what you see with Bernie is his base voters are young people that would have, that know all about this stuff, the Occupy and all that. And I think to an extent, those Democratic voters you were talking about that support Donald Trump is that base.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't trust, you know, he's funding himself. Who knows? You know, like, at least he's not backed by Merrill Lynch or whatever, you know? Like, there's that quality to him. And if you listen to a lot of what he says, I'm going to regulate the banks. I don't want to invade Syria. You know, he obviously flip-flops on a lot of that stuff as well.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So you don't know where he stands for.
I don't think he knows.
But
I think he just wants to win. I think that's what this is.
And it's just a populist thing. So he just goes for everyone.
Put it on your CV.
I agree. But I think that's definitely what you're seeing with Bernie. When he came out, it was just like, this guy can never get any traction. And he's getting some traction.
Well, I think
not enough, but he's getting something.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting is that you have Bernie and Donald and Hillary as the three, and Hillary's the only person that's been aligned with a party for a long time. The other two are independents, essentially, and Donald's not really been involved in politics at all. So it's an interesting time. But I mean, my daughter's an American citizen, and I've jokingly talked about revoking her citizenship if Donald got elected. I don't know. It's a curious time.
I would be really interested to see what he would do. I'm not advocating for him to be, but it would be interesting to see a person go in there that isn't backed by Wall Street, that doesn't have all these ties to that sort of stuff, that it, you know, automatically isn't just going to, who knows what he's going to do? That's the thing. It's flipping a coin, man.
I honestly think he'd kill himself or be killed because he just couldn't. There's no way that dude can hack doing that job. Like, it's just,
I don't think he knows what the job is.
Definitely doesn't. Yeah. I mean, you know, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed Obama himself said, whoa. You know, a few years in, it was like, I just, you know, and I don't think you can. Like, how can you know what that job is going to be? But it's not. It's not as simple as being hard-lined. I don't know what it is either.
I think Rogan said it well on one of the podcasts I listened to, and he was saying, what he hopes is if he wins, he gets in there and says, how ridiculous, easy it was for me to win with all the stupid stuff I was saying? Right, sorry for all that, but I needed to get in here. Let's get down to business, or something like that. Yeah. And that it was all like a reality show to get in there.
And that's wishful thinking.
Oh, exactly.
By all accounts, he's in gigantic personal debt as well, you know? It's like, it's not a, yeah, I don't know.
What's New Zealand need? Like, do we need a Bernie? Can you even be a Bernie here?
We are way more, like, even the left in America is to the right of our right.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I...
Some of the stuff you hear, like say the, what was it, public healthcare, like Obamacare, that's private healthcare. If that came here, that would be private healthcare.
But we don't have, like, okay, can you guys explain to me then, having been away for a while, I had this whole thing where I was in America and it was like, I didn't have healthcare. And I went to the doctors and I would pay $60 or $70 for a doctor's visit. And then I'd get my medication and then there was that. I come here and I pay $55 or whatever I pay. I'm like, well, what is this free healthcare we talk about?
Well, it's subsidized.
I think it's the operations, is it? Like if you go, I needed a shoulder operation just for an old rugby injury and I never paid anything. So I wonder if... David in the States needed to get a
would have cost me more for sure.
Maybe that's the true.
Well, you can
saving.
Be subsidized by the government as well. So when you go to the doctor, I think it cost me like $17.
Right,
and then when I go buy drugs, it costs like $3.
But then the $5. Don't be silly.
Like it was $3 at one point.
Yeah, true. Yeah, well, milk was cheaper too.
Well, no, think about like you used to like leave your bottle of milk out with money, and that was okay.
Yeah.
But that's like a different time, man. If you just think about how silly that feels now.
I used to steal that money.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you ever get busted stealing milk? Did you ever get busted stealing?
Stole my maths teacher's car once when I was in high school.
Damn, David.
But I didn't get caught.
Not till now. Is this one of those things I should cut out?
I had a few maths teachers. No, I have been arrested a number of times for student political protesting. I was arrested for breaking into Wyatt Creech's office when he was the Minister of Education. Right. And I was arrested for trespassing on Parliament grounds when we flyered the gallery, leafleted the gallery and like just threw them out in the middle whilst they were discussing the green paper on the privatisation of green... of education, which led to a really large protest after my arrest and a couple of other people's arrest for against the fact that we'd been charged with trespass notices on what should have been public property. And that led to, if my memory serves, the largest scale arrest on Parliament grounds since the homosexual law reform. So there was about 85, 87 people got arrested and all the jail cells were full of all of us first and second year university students.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty wild time, to be honest.
I want to know, what did I do wrong? I wanted to be part of all that stuff. I think I was just too fat and lazy. And just, there was a time where I just enjoyed being a jock and cruise around and just like smash my body and get drunk.
You see, I never did that. I got drunk and I smashed my body, but I was...
You were a jock then.
There was never any sports associated with it. It was always, I think when the connotations associated with like a jock mentality just wasn't part of my life. I grew up in a really Christian family. And then I was extraordinarily excited to get out of home. And I moved to Wellington and discovered kind of, you know, drugs and alcohol and had a whole different kind of take on life. It was a very cliche, like home leaving scenario, but did a degree in religious studies and and got into politics and then got into event management because I was on the student council, and you couldn't do the same job 2 years in a row. So the first year was student politics and the second year was events, and that was when I ended up managing Fur Patrol and then moving to Australia and ultimately ended up in New York. So
what's the future, man? We've kind of had a bit of a taste on where you've come from. Where are you going, David?
Well, right now, my daughter's mom moved to Tauranga from New York City. And so in order for me to be a meaningful part of her life growing up and see her regularly, I needed to leave New York. I miss New York, but not as much as I would have missed my daughter. So really, at the moment, it's about her. She turns 4 in a couple of weeks. And it's about trying to entertain yourself whilst making a living in a country with a population this size. And that has been music for me for the last 20 years, really. And that's really difficult in a country with this type of population to sustain it whilst being here, because I can't travel anywhere near as much as I used to, because every fortnight I've got my daughter, which is wonderful. But until she's a little older, I'd like to start taking her back to New York when she gets a little bit older, just for little holidays, so that she can make an educated decision between the beautiful sandy beaches of Mount Maunganui and in a New York City subway.
Exactly.
But for now, the future is, for me, it's Vice. I get to focus on expanding and growing and developing a company that has a very fresh perspective and continues to renew itself. It doesn't stay still. I go and meet with companies nowadays who are still talking about the fact they need to kind of start kind of really getting into the, like, upping their social media game or something. And it's like, man, that's just extraordinary to me. And, you know, the larger the company, the slower it moves. But the Vice model has always been, will always be, to maintain this kind of intake and of young, influential, exciting, intelligent people who see the world and want to push things and see things from a slightly different perspective and look for those stories that exist and want to tell those stories themselves in a kind of, so having, yeah, continually every year having newer, younger people come on board allows the people that have been around for a bit longer to focus on the people management and the business side of things and utilizing the experience they've gained through those things whilst you can still have these young, fresh, exciting ideas coming through all the time with people that are in touch with things that, I don't know how old you guys are, but it's just legitimately impossible to stay on top of every single thing that happens.
Yeah.
And so you've got to, you know, you have this host of young, enthusiastic people that do it for you. And I find it really fascinating. With the new people we've hired, we've got this young 21-year-old, and she's extraordinary. And she's, you know, I'm almost old enough to be a dad, but she's great. And watching the way she perceives life and how she consumes information and what is important to her and what isn't is—it's interesting. It's very refreshing having younger people around you.
Well, if you ever need a 35-year-old overweight taking Propecia to get his hair back, locked into a job, family, I'm right here. Can
you Done.
Thanks, man. Hey, man, if you we
really
just take
sold
that,
yourself,
exactly, put it on your CV, Will. Take that perspective. We've got down to some nuts and bolts in our chat. Now pop ourselves on the moon. We're looking at the Earth. If you have to pitch the Earth, what's it all about? What's your view on it? Like, I guess that's a weird way of saying, what's the whole meaning of everything? Have you worked it out in your travels? your thoughts?
My brother and I have this saying that is, live every day as if it's your last, but plan to wake up tomorrow. Because if we literally did live every day as if it was our last, we would burn and destroy everything in our path. And we wouldn't give a fuck because it'd be done, you know. But if you plan to wake up tomorrow, then you need to have something left. For me, it's about having, and this is as much an attitude to everyday life as it is anything else, but I believe that you need to, you know, these are, none of this is new thoughts, new thinking, but it is about embracing the moment and not having regrets. I regret the fact I don't live in New York anymore at the moment, because I miss it and I have friends there that I miss, but I don't regret the fact that I get to be with my daughter and I've got this shot at running, being involved in this company, and doing things that I get to have a positive impact on that by trying to influence it in order to do the things that I want it to do and grow in the way I want it to grow. And it's about, I think, in terms of figuring it out and what the meaning of it all is about extracting as much out of every day as you possibly can. Things don't happen at you or to you. Things happen and you choose as to the level you desire to engage with that thing that has happened. And sitting around complaining about what you don't have or how difficult things are, or you're the only one that can change it. So it's about figuring out what makes you happy and what you're interested in and what you want to achieve, and then going about doing that, I think.
That's good stuff, man. Hey, in about a month's time, we're going to change the setup here a little bit and we're going to start streaming live. Would you come back and be a repeat guest? Because yeah, I've only scratched the surface. I feel like we need a bit more time.
Sure.
Life's got the best of us today. I've got to get home.
Yeah, no.
Get some kids to bed.
Yeah.
No. David Benj, man, thank you so much for being our guest.
Not at all. Thank you.
Well, that's us, folks. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening in. Thank you so much to David for being the man, coming into the studio, sitting down and being prepared just to strip it all back and do what we do as humans. Just talk. No agendas necessary. Awesome. Hey, a few thanks again, Podcasts New Zealand. Thank you, team, for being awesome. Paul Spain and your crew doing great work. If you want free content that really is having the finger on the pulse of what's going on, podcasts.nz is the place to go. A few other thanks as well. Crawford, thank you, man. Appreciate all the time you're putting in. Pal Muzz, helping out with the stuff. This is good. We've got a little team building, a little network of awesome people. David Benj, have to say thank you again. So good luck with everything that's coming forward to you, David. Vice New Zealand will be perfect, man. We've got your back there. Anything you need, we got your back. Hey, I just want to explain what's going on with these little outros. So I started playing last week. You may have heard a little original number of mine that I put in there. And so about 3 years ago, I was kind of playing around on the guitar and I decided to record a few. And so I didn't really know what to do with them. They'd just been sitting on a hard drive. And I thought, you know what? Maybe the podcast is a good little way just to show you guys that this has been a process coming to the podcast. You know, I've been always trying to find creative outlets and just, you know, work out what the heck's going on. So over the next few weeks, I'll just be rolling out a few original numbers. And yeah, it's a bit weird for me actually, because I'm not that comfortable with putting that stuff out there. But I do feel like if I'm about to grow, if I'm, you know, challenging everyone's perspective to widen, then I should take a bit of a punt myself. So this one that I'm playing to you today is a song called Respect You, Protect You. It's a little bit cheesy, but so am I, so deal with it. And it's interesting, I was having a chat to a pal this morning about how I write music, and I'm straight up, I watch movies and I'll take the best bits out of that and repackage that. But I think movies, what they do is they offer a narrative. They say, this is happening because of that, and it helps you understand what's going on. I don't know if it really helps us in life, but that's not the point. I like catchy kind of poppy tunes,
Poppy, can you still say pop? I'm not sure. Pop's an evil word, right? Anyway, I like catchy tunes. So this is my attempt over the next few weeks just to release a few of my original tracks. And that's me, folks. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Thank you again for downloading, subscribing to My Kiwi Life on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at WillFlemingNZ. You can email me if you want. Say hello from wherever you are in the world, will.fleming@podcasts.nz. So that's us, team. Go out, give someone a hug, say hello, do what we do to be human, you know? Make yourself hungry for a day and just remember what it's like to not be full and bloated and all that stuff. You know, start there. Do the simple things. Go for a walk. Look long distance. All that stuff. That's the stuff I'm trying to practice at the moment. All right, enough rambling, enough babbling on. Enjoy your week, folks. We'll see you next week on My Kiwi Life.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi Life.